Okay, and welcome everybody to the GC On Demand podcast. It's always fun when we get to talk about new things. And you know, I make a point of trying not to say things like this week and last week and time-related stuff, because quite often, you know, we don't necessarily know when people are going to listen to what we're talking about here. But I'm going to talk about last week, because on March 31st, I was lucky enough to be with the Tech Field Day crew at an Intel Cloud Day event. It was a lot of fun. We saw some really neat announcements, you know, on the hardware side, on the software side, basically every layer of the stack. And, you know, as someone who's who works at every layer of the stack, it was super exciting for me. And what was great was also to reconnect with, you know, some friends that are working inside Intel. And it was a neat opportunity to take a look at what's going on there and the evolution of, you know, how things are going in the industry and some in the product areas. So today, I'm very lucky that I've got Matthew Brender with us here. And you may or may not know Matthew, and you know, he is at MJ Brender on Twitter, and he's much, much more. But today, you know, why don't we introduce you, and you introduce yourself and tell us where we can find you online. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that came out of the Intel event.
Oh, my pleasure. Always great to hang out with you, Eric. My name is Matthew Brender. I'm a developer advocate at Intel in the software-defined infrastructure team. So we are strategizing around emerging technology, open source, particularly the open source work around automation, schedulers, and orchestration engines. So really interesting stuff. Get to go down to the hardware, but try to figure out how that percolates up into a compelling software-defined story.
And this is fun. I'm going to go back to, I always love the pre-show stuff is always the stuff you wish you were recording, because it would just like, it lays in perfectly. And we, you know, I joked about, you know, hardware defined versus software defined. And every once in a while we think it's like retro to talk about hardware defined stuff. But, you know,
it's so true.
You really laid out something neat, you know, about how, you know, they each depend on the other. So, you know, what is software defined? So let's start there, because I know it's a tough one for people to wrap their heads around sometimes.
You know what? I just continue to find this trend of software defined versus hardware defined. It's a conversation about the two of them being more than the sum of their parts. Like for me, like if you look at just a server, no matter how pretty the hardware is, how shiny and new and very effective and all the cores and smaller footprint, all of that, it's just a box if there's no great software running on it. And then software is just absolutely meaningless if you don't have the systems that can support it. I mean, the reason that, just like to bring it to a personal day-to-day thing, the reason that when I load up a web browser, I can have all these beautiful visuals is because we've mastered the hardware behind the scenes to deliver that in within the user experience time that we expect. And that takes incredible hardware throughout the system. So when we get to a software-defined infrastructure conversation, the core of it, like the thing that's different, is not actually about hardware and software. It's about how we approach the data center. And we approach it more systematically, almost with a programmer mindset, but particularly with this idea of infrastructure as code, automation at the source of things, and not having to be somebody on the CLI typing things in order to get something done. Our systems can be a little bit smarter, a little bit more interoperable with the different layers and understanding how one piece affects the other. And we have some logic behind the scenes that can take care of that for us.
That's awesome. And you touched on two perfect things. We'll pick on them one at a time. You know, one was Please. Interoperable. And that's probably one of the key factors and one of the problems we always have is like, how do you create the right abstraction, you know, and right way to, you know, I always think of Douglas Adams wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He also wrote something called Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. And his goal was to find the fundamental interconnectedness of all things. And this is what's happening today in everything. You know, it's what's the right API, what's the right abstraction, how do we get all these things to speak to each other and stay loosely coupled? So how do you pick where the right spot is? And, you know, talk about, you know, stuff that you've seen and what you're doing, you know, with your group and about creating those effective abstractions and right ways to create interoperability to other systems.
Oh my goodness. It's just, you're asking for an argument no matter what when you get into one of those conversations. But I think that's a healthy place. Like, we're at a time where we truly have the ability to reinvent how we deliver services in the data center, and we have to have open conversations about it. So when I think about the ways that are very effective, I mean, I'd have to take into effect, like, the main thing that we're focused on as a team right now is discussing Snap, the open telemetry framework we designed. And when we look at that architecture of the system, it tells you exactly what we stand by, which is this idea of openness. It's software designed for any architecture. It's all open source under Apache 2. So I say the first thing, there's a prerequisite of people showing up and sharing. Sharing as an immediate part, if you want anything to be well adopted as a standard in an industry, it has to be open source these days. I totally respect that somebody has to monetize at the end of the day, but that doesn't mean you're going to get widely adopted if you don't have an open source component of your software stack. And then I think on top of that, you really have to think about how are people interacting with your agent or task manifest or workflow, whatever sort of engine you're discussing. And that requires an open API that's well documented and follows the standards of REST and is easy to grok. Like, you can understand it by looking at it. So those are the two major things that I think weigh into this. Like, that's why open source is so prevalent these days, is that it creates a greater democratization of information. And then you have to have the APIs behind it, which is why Snap is really unique, being a telemetry framework, you know, an age-old problem set of gathering logs and content and metrics and data from all these disparate systems. But to formulate that in a single coherent API that then normalizes it into a single catalog that is a clear schema that can be passed to any endpoint, that's unique. So those are the points. Not to oversell the Snap part, it's just, I think it shows the value of the new architecture type.
And I like that your team has come up with a really good approach, and the community has latched onto it. And you're right, you know, openness is kind of the open is the new successful. Yeah, and not there's two pieces, right? There's running a product, and there's running a business that's wrapped around a product. Obviously, you know, Intel's got a whole slew of different
Exactly.
things that they're doing. You know, sometimes even like single productized, you know, platforms. Docker is an example, and you know, we're seeing where they're going to monetize on it with services and other management frameworks, you know. And then we saw the other side where stuff like Open Nebula, where they people said, oh well, Open Nebula, you know, didn't make it as a business, so therefore OpenStack has failed. And it was like, no, this isn't causation, this is, you know, it's not even correlation, it just it's tough to measure what it is that you're looking at when we talk about the failure. The failure was not in it's, you know, the fact that we had a burn rate that was higher than the fact that they could bring customers on board. It wasn't that the product they were selling wasn't a good product, and it's tough to
Yeah,
separate
because
the two.
by that same logic, you would actually you know, damn a lot of very successful companies in our industry right now from ever being successful, despite the fact that they are. So, you know, giving one case is not does not prove a point in this particular open source world. I think we're all trying to figure out the right balance between creating something that is software that adds value to an ecosystem, like we have the opportunity to do in the SDI team at Intel, versus creating a business model around something. They're two different beasts, and you've got to respect which one you're trying to tackle.
And Intel's got a really good open source, you know, mentality there. You know, how did was that something that kind of drew you to them and the work that's going on in your team? 'Cause I love it. I mean, it's refreshing to see such a huge company that has a huge forward-facing open source, you know, approach to things, and it's happening across the entire organization, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm incredibly proud and honored to be part of Intel. And I know I would not have been on board, to be totally honest, if I didn't know we were producing open source software. You know, we both come from the VMware community. You know, we've been around a lot of other ones as well, but VMware is my heart. that the people in the virtualization community are just unlike any others, the way they congregated and built community together and shared knowledge. And I think open source just can use our tribalism, like our energy, a very positive, forgiving, open arms conversation. So as I see the virtualization community span out into different topics, as people dig into DevOps as an expertise, as people dig into programming more and more, or people double down on infrastructure, or just look at it as infrastructure as code, all of us are still growing that community, and open source is a way to, I don't know, flex that muscle of sharing openly and just hoping that it benefits someone else. So it's crucial to me, and I see the benefits as well, because you also, like, open source opens the doors to other people adopting a new idea and also feeling part of it by giving back to it. I mean, nothing makes me happier that when, like, I'm reading a document that has a typo and then I can go fix it myself by opening a pull request. That makes me feel, like, as minor as it is, it makes
it's awesome,
me feel part of something bigger. Yeah, it's happiness. And, like, when you think about all the GUIs that we've used since, you know, day one of our career, we've all just wanted to do that just once. Like, can I just please go improve the documentation? I know I could add to it. And we're living in a time where the answer is yes, you can go fork it.
Yeah, it's refreshing. Like you said, it's something we've always wanted to do. You're like, yeah, I could solve this for this company right now. And you know, and you submit a support request, it's probably going to go, you know, fall into a bit bucket somewhere, and it'll never actually make it to a developer or engineer, you know, because it's just, there's no way to get into that machine. But, you know, by open sourcing it, it's a great opportunity. Now,
yeah, it's too many layers.
I want to talk about the other side of open source, and not that it's a huge thing, but, you know, it stands out in the news sometimes when you see it, you know, stuff where open source has risk. You know, when you open it up, you also open yourself up to potentially, you know, steering away from the core of the, you know, the project itself. Here's the, when you're a company, you have a mantra, you have a statement, you have something that tells you this is what we're achieving with this. And everything we do kind of feeds back into that core message. When you open source something, there's two problems. One, it could sort of widely steer, but not always a bad thing, because maybe it means that you need to invest in those areas. But the other thing is the risk. And, you know, I'm going to talk about, you know, Revolve, which is it was a company that was picked up by Google as part of the, you know, Nest. It was all rolled in. And all of a sudden, we've got these Revolve smart home devices that they say, hey, guess what? You know, we don't want to support these ones anymore. Not only are they not going to support it, but we're cutting the cord and we're going to brick the device because we don't want to support this code. And we've seen it in code on GitHub all the time. You're like, ooh, this totally solves a problem. Oh, the last commit was 2.5 years ago. Like, oh,
yeah.
I don't know if I want to put this into something that I'm going to use, because I may not want to be the one that's got to, you know, prop this thing up for the rest of its life.
Yeah.
What about the risk side of being entirely open?
Yeah. And I think you bring up a valid point. I suppose that just comes to me to frame it as something like that any of us can do. It's like you need to assess the value of what you're using. So let's take something as simple as like a library you're installing in a very simple, like on a server. Like somebody wrote that code somewhere. And if it's like a core supported library by a vendor, you tend to have more faith in it. So they could always also let it go. That's always a possibility. So you have to understand, you have to really assess the value of the open source software and the commitment around it. So two things I look for personally to know that an open source project is going to last. It has to be more than a single company. If, say, for Snap, for instance, if Snap was just Intel Snap and it was owned just by us and we had no model by which we were accepting external code and looking to get external maintainers, then honestly, I would think that like there's a timeline on that where this might not last. Or if it was just a, you know, let's drop this code on GitHub, you know, get some likes on our Facebook page and move on. But in our case with Snap, like we are an engineering team where this is the first part of a big idea around intelligent resource orchestration and understanding the value you can get from your hardware and percolate that up to your software. And Snap is the basis for a lot to come. So in that sense, like it's about knowing that this has longevity behind it. It has maintainers, it has committers, it has a structure that is going to last, and it has a roadmap in front of it. So you have to do that with all software you write and all tools you use. Like anyone that's ever done a PO to add new software to their data center, they know that they have to figure out, like, is this company going to be around? Are they an acquisition target? And could I lose the contractor? Could I lose the support that I rely on? I think it's an old risk, but you just have to look at it through a new lens.
Yeah, and it does give you the opportunity to, you know, be a part of the success of that, you know, directly versus indirectly by just buying more stuff. You really have an opportunity, and quite often you see these things get, you know, picked back up. I think of it as like, you know, open source projects that get a resurgence are like the way that we got Family Guy back on the air, because, you know, they're like, well, we're not seeing the numbers, and then all of a sudden they put it to, you know, they just basically dump it on DVD or whatever, and people are buying it up like crazy. It's the reason that Office Space is a cult hit. That's the open source mentality. Like, well, hey, look, you may not have it live on the air right now, but guess what? We're going to buy this up like crazy. And all of a sudden you go, oh, we better put some heart back into this and you know, put it back up in front. And it's neat to see things like that. And open source projects are getting resurgence again, you know, and conceptually, I think is the biggest thing. Nailing the concepts, and that's what I love about what Snap's doing. You know, like I said, conceptually, you're hitting the target, and then you're building a framework around it to allow everyone to hit the same target using the same APIs, using the same methods. It's very, very cool.
So Eric, yeah, you're hitting on the point that I think is very important, that all software is opinionated. Like, you have to have an opinion on what you're trying to achieve and by which means you'll achieve it, and have that clear goal in mind for your developers, internal and external, to whatever core group is building it. So anyone that is saying that their software is universally applicable, it usually means they're trying to bite off a little bit too much all at once. And I think admitting what your goals are and the parameters of those goals and how to help other people fill in those gaps so it can become the best, the most universal framework at some point is great. But everything starts out with a problem to solve. And if it's not opinionated in its way of solving it, it usually just means it hasn't solved any problems yet.
That's right. Yeah, it's we talk about it as, you know, the solution for a problem that doesn't exist. You know, and we quite often get into that as technologists. We try and create sexy code and sexy products, and then you realize, like, oh, you know, it's cute and all, but it hasn't actually solved a real challenge. And I like the word opinion in there. It is important that it stuff has to be opinionated. It has to be firm. And it's tough, you know, to kind of know the right way to do that. It's, you know, we see it all the time. So it's neat that you've picked on a lot of really great things.
Yeah. And we're having that conversation every day. Like, as we think of, all right, as you collect more metrics, how does that get populated into a single catalog? What's the namespace of that catalog? What does that mean for a schema when it's published to this database or that message queue? All these things take a few people having a decision and then writing that into code. What I love about the model is that all of this conversation happens publicly over pull requests. And I'm happy every single time a community person that's interested in Snap gets involved in the conversation, because very much like Twitter was and still is, GitHub is an open conversation where you welcome external expertise and you welcome people giving feedback. So I guess if there's any call to action for this when it comes to open source, as we get to that sort of, you know, conclusion that open source is powerful, it's that don't feel like it's out of your control, because it's very much in your control. We love external contributions. I've actually added a label in our GitHub repos that's called Help Wanted, so people can figure out, you know, if you're first perusing through, that which ones we're actively working on ourselves versus which ones we're asking other people to jump in and help. And I think that model scales really nicely as adoption picks up.
That's very cool because you, quite often people get there and it's like, I don't, now where do I start? You know, and it can get overwhelming and they hit analysis paralysis and then they bail out, which it's tough because you want them to succeed. You want people to be able to come in and just like, all right, here's my, you know, when people publish open source stuff, you always want to tell them like, hey, if you want contributors, make sure you put in a contributing guide. Like give people the right steps to get them to the point where they can do a build, you know, push a PR, do these things. How was that something that, you know, that happened in other products and other projects you guys are running, or was that, you know, something that you kind of just picked up, you know, for this particular one because of the scale of it?
Well, I think it's something that, just to be fair, I work at Intel. Intel's massive, as I'm sure you know. So there's a lot of people that have varying levels of expertise in open source projects. But I can say on our particular team, this is the first major framework that we knew could be a big deal that we were doing ourselves. And I got hired back at the beginning of the year, in part just to help kind of get those pieces together for launch, based on my experience with open source projects elsewhere. So we knew what was coming, that we needed that. We needed to understand our users, like both the people that are just going to pick up Snap as a binary and run it like an agent, like any other ops engineer. And then we had the developers audience, like the people that are going to need to know how to go get it and set up their Go path and configure it and build. And honestly, that's an evolving conversation. Like, it can always be easier to build software. It can always be a little bit cleaner as you go forward. So I can't think of a week where I haven't looked at the documentation and opened a PR to touch it up a little bit. But you will, if you hop to our repository, you will find a ton on both how to build the framework, how to build plugins yourselves, all the utilities we use to build plugins so that it's a little bit easier out of the box to make it yourself, and then a bunch of best practices for doing so. So we spent a lot of time writing the documentation on this, and we continue to do so.
Nice. And let's roll back to the other, you know, that was a great, you know, stream that we got on, but I want to touch back on automation. You know, as we that came up early and I said like that's another key point. And we've got so much in the industry that we've got an opportunity to automate things, and it's challenging for a lot of engineers to understand like how do we do this, and operations teams are they're fighting with it. So how do you approach automation as when you're producing a product like this? You know, you're producing a project that's gonna get out there and try and solve a challenge. How do you get people to embrace automation at that layer and like kind of trust it?
Love it. I think it comes down to one word. It's a word I had no idea until I started playing with automation frameworks. But once you write it on the board and discuss what it means and make sure everyone's on the same page, I think it just clears this up. And it's item potency. You have to discuss item potency, which is, I'm gonna butcher it a little, but it's just the principle that as when you run something, it can only be in one state at the end of it. It's not like a bash script that will go just like, okay, go make this directory. And then the second time you run it, it's going to error out because it's already made that directory. It's something that it could still be a bash script that goes and checks if the directory exists and then makes it if it doesn't exist. And just the ability to run something over and over and over again and know not what it's going to do, but what state something's going to be in at the end, I think that's crucial. And that's also crucial to start from the term item potency and work backwards, because I think that's what makes people understand how powerful a RESTful API can be. Because with a good RESTful API, you have states, you have something that you can rely on and just be able to pull or pull from or push to, depending. And that's how you're able to get like really simplistic interfaces by which you can make really beautiful GUIs on, like what we've been able to do with the guys at Grafana, picking up Snap as something you can visualize in Grafana.
And that's a perfect lean into the next piece. You know, we talk about programmatically, you know, so you've nailed, here's ways to create frameworks, APIs, all these ways you can consume this. But Hey, guess what? Someone's got to look at it and not just have a screen that looks like the Matrix code pouring down the screen and say, I see, you know, blonde, brunette, redhead. Like, no, we have to visualize a lot of these things. So how did the Grafana thing come to be? And maybe you want to talk about Grafana.net and what that's all about.
Sure. I mean, I'm so pleased to see that we got some organic interest from the guys at Grafana. So for those less familiar, Grafana it's become a de facto standard in the open source world as a beautiful visual dashboard for operations engineers or developers, depending on what information you want to put in there. So a few clicks, a few pointers, and you point to things that are pulling information, and then you visualize them in one or more ways. So you can start checking out everything from your server metrics to your CPU utilization to your cache hit ratio on disk. It doesn't matter, as long as there's something that can pull it and push it to the interface, you're good to go. And that's where the natural connection happens, right? Because if you can pull it in a consistent way, you can visualize it. And Snap is all about allowing people to consistently pull the same, like, diverse sets of information and publish it to diverse endpoints in any number of ways you need. So they saw the connection, honestly, before we did, and asked, like, hey, can we get more involved in this? Can we start building things? And the answer is always yes. No matter how big or small your company is, you can be involved in the Snap project. It's a ambitious project for all data center operations to make your utilization of your servers end up being, you know, higher, like being able to use your systems better by understanding how your systems work. So to bring that to a close, like they said, well, instead of just visualizing information from Snap, wouldn't it be cool if we can actually do ad hoc queries from Grafana using Snap, since we have the API to do so? So that, like, while you're troubleshooting something, you can actually dig down into more specific metrics using a new Snap query right from the GUI. And just the dots connecting there is really special.
And I love their plugin, you know, plugin framework that they've got. It's like, they make it, again, super easy. They're developing that as a, like, hey, you want to build an interface to whatever other product or tool you've got in place, then here's an easy way to do it. And again, you know, simple, loosely coupled frameworks that are easy to map to. It's really, really, really cool. And, you know, visually, it's a neat one. I've always been a fan of, you know, putting Grafana on InfluxDB in front of some stuff, and it's a great way to visualize some things.
Yeah, and talk about, you know, just understanding, like, what you want to be opinionated about. Like, they have two core concepts, you know, with what the graph represents, the metadata you need to make a graph, and that's coming from some sort of data store. So all they had to do is point to Snap as a new data store, and they're able to pull the information, you know, the JSON objects out of SnapD, the daemon, and just start visualizing them very easily. It was a day's worth of dev. I mean, and then, so because that was so easy, they decided to go a little bit further and start adding this interface by which you can actually create new tasks, so new workflows, and look for more metrics right in the UI, and then be able to start graphing those at intervals that are sub-millisecond.
And that's, especially when you think of, like, real-time systems now, it's, you know, real-time it changed the way that we operate, it changed the way that we automate, it changed the way that we, you know, go back and look at what's happened. It's we don't have the advantage of batch cycles and, you know, all right, well, how did everything go last night? And you spend the morning doing postmortems on how overnight runs, when it's like, no, this is continuous real-time stuff.
Yeah. And the fact that you and I can have our own dashboards, even if we're on the same team, and then we can make another one and share it with the developer and be like, hey, here's how you're actually affecting the server that you're using with this particular thing. The fact that you can get all these layers and visualize them simultaneously, there's multiple things there. It's the fact that you can measure from all those disparate layers and have a single API to do so, but also the fact that you can share that with people. It gets into, you know, we could have a whole hour conversation on how the DevOps mentality can change the way we work. But I think the short of it is that we can share more easily and we can be better teammates to each other. So empowering that will always be something worth doing, in my opinion.
Amen to that. So well, that's a great place for us to wrap up. You know, unfortunately, like I said, we could go for hours on that. And one of these days I want to do like, we need to have like an all day panel and just have a huge group of folks to talk about these things. But let's put some focus on the work that's going on. So again, how do we find you online and the SDIX group? And, you know, let's talk, you know, point them to the GitHub and what are all the good places to go to find out more about Snap and more about the work you're doing there?
Absolutely. The best place to find all of that right now is to go to github.com. You can either just search for Snap or go /intel-sdi-x, the Intel Software Defined team, and X is for something, and then /snap, and you can start seeing our software, seeing our open issues. You can always message me on GitHub at MJBrender or on Twitter at MJBrender.
It's good to see responsiveness too. So, you know, again, from folks that are, you know, watching this and consuming it and trying to feedback into it, thank you. And to all the folks on the team for really being interactive and letting the community feedback in and help to drive this together. It's a lot of fun. Okay, so with that, I'm going to remind everybody, if you want to hear more about the GC On Demand podcast, of course, you can go to gcondemand.io, and that'll have a link to all of our other shows, and it has the subscription links for iTunes and to Stitcher. I'm Disco Posse, otherwise known as Eric Wright. You can find me, I'm at Disco Posse on Twitter. I'm Disco Posse in the Green Circle, which is greencircle.vmturbo.com. And don't forget to stay tuned and listen. We're going to have lots and lots more good shows ahead for us. Thank you.